Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
I took her everywhere she wanted to go, did everything she wanted to do. It wasn't any trouble. She didn't want to go much or do much. For the first time, and I don't remember when, my mind was really free. I knew I had to kill Amy. I could put the reason into words, but every time I thought about it, I had to stop and think why again. I'd be doing something, reading a book or something, and all of a sudden it would come over me that I was going to kill him. And the idea seemed so crazy that I'd almost laugh out loud. Then I'd start thinking, I'd see it. See that it had to be done.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2010 film, The Killer Inside Me. Based on the novel by Jim Thompson, the film was written by John Curran, directed by Michael Winterbottom, and stars Casey Affleck, Jessica Alba, and Kate Hudson. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest Mr. Zach Krusey.
Hey now!
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And we are also sponsored by Audible. And Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. So, Mr. Krusey, what is it that you're drinking since you're a bachelor tonight?
I am a bachelor tonight. I am drinking this Hopped Up and Horny.
Ooh.
Yeah. I figured while I'm talking to Eric, I mean, this is...
While you're talking about this movie, you're like, you know what? That makes me randy.
Yes. Yes. So I figure it's an appropriately named beer. It's from this Horny Goat Brewing Company out of Wisconsin. It's pretty good.
Nice.
I like it. Yeah.
Nice. Wisconsin has a lot of good brews, I've discovered.
Yes. Wisconsin and Michigan, I think, are both pretty pretty stacked as far as that goes.
Yeah, because I know a few pals of mine that live in Chicago, and they head up to Wisconsin quite often.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
A little Spotted Cow action, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say they go to the Nuclearis. Stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am I'm drinking a girly bev today. I'm getting up early because I have to work early in the morning, so I'm having a grapefruit vodka. No, that's not true. Actually, it's not grapefruit. What am I thinking? It's cranberry and vodka. I'm so used to having the grapefruit vodka, it just rolls off my tongue, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So, not having a UTI, in case people are wondering. Just a little cranberry, a little vodka. It was either that or it was the sort of faux orange juice.
Like
The Tropicana 50 or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like sugar water that's orange or yellow.
It's kind of like Sunny D.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't know. I'll be a fancy lady and go with cranberry instead.
Not naming names, but I once knew a man, or I still know a man, that I had to buy copious amounts of cranberry juice for. And he didn't admit it, but I suspect it's because he was trying to ward off UTIs.
Nice.
Yeah. Fun fact. I'll just throw it out there. Since
they're a killer.
About UTIs. They are dangerous for you.
I'll have to bring it up to Ben next time I see him.
Yeah, definitely not Ben.
It wasn't Ben. It wasn't Will Pfeiffer. It wasn't anybody that we both know and talk to.
No, it was totally Ben, though.
There you go. That's all right. Ben's a tough guy. He can take it.
Yeah, he's fine.
Okay. So, with that, I think we're ready to kick off our discussion of the 2010 film, The Killer Inside Me.
I love Joyce. And there were times when her voice seemed to whisper to me. Forget it, Lou. It's not too late if you stop now. But then I'd see that it had to be done.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Don't. I have to travel.
Baby, you aren't going anywhere.
Oh.
I bet they had it coming.
Well, nobody has it coming to them. That's why nobody can see it coming.
IMDb plot synopsis goes like this. Sadism and masochism beneath a veneer of revenge. Lou Ford is a mild-mannered sheriff's deputy in a Texas oil town in the mid-1950s. His boss sends him to roust a prostitute living in a rural house. She slaps him. He hits her. Then after daily sex for the next few weeks, he decides it's love. She's devoted to him and becomes his pawn in a revenge plot she thinks is to shake down the son of Chester Conway, the town's wealthy king of construction. Lou has a different plan, and bodies pile up as murder leads to murder. The district attorney suspects Lou, and Conway may have an inkling, but Lou stays cool. Is love, or at least peace, in the cards? So, Mr. Cruzy.
Yes?
Tell me about you in this film. Because this is quite a disturbing piece of cinema.
Yeah, it's unsettling. It's really unsettling. I saw the movie after I read the book. I didn't even know it was a movie. And just stumbled upon it. And I like the book. I think the book's very good. And I enjoyed this as well. I was surprised by the cast. I guess the thing that surprised me most about it when I first saw it was the fact that I hadn't heard of it. A, because I had read the book, and B, because of the cast. I mean, it's a pretty incredible cast.
Yes. Well, that's usually a big red flag if it's a movie based on something that you're aware of and you haven't heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. I was like, oh no. Why have I not heard of this? And so I don't know why I hadn't heard of it. It slipped past me. I mean, Casey Jones is in it. So, right. So, you know, I just kind of stumbled upon it, in that way. But I read the book, you know, long before that, and really liked Jim Thompson. And, I was eager to see it.
I was also surprised by the casting. I had this was on my queue for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was surprisingly, and I don't know what this is from, but it is, Netflix and their guess for what you're going to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
It had given me 1.5 stars.
Really?
And it seems like most of everything that I see, it's, you know, really highly in tune with what I'm going to think of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, that's really strange that it's, you know, that Zach thinks highly enough of it to choose it and that I'm supposed to really not like it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this could be interesting. What it made me think of when I saw that it was a novel and had this sort of cast, and when you were just talking about how you hadn't heard of it before, it made me think of All the Pretty Horses.
Oh, right.
You know, to where the Cormac McCarthy novel that has Matt Damon, Penelope Cruz, and I believe just went to DVD. I don't even know if it got a theatrical release.
Right.
So that was one I had never even heard of. And then I just saw, I think back in the Blockbuster days, I just saw it and was like, whoa, what the hell? What is this? So that's a good sign is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think that's a perfectly valid reaction. I mean, that was kind of my reaction as well. It's like, why, not just why haven't I heard of this, but why haven't I, you know?
Right,
So I was skeptical going into it, but I ended up really liking it. The first time through, I liked it okay, but I liked it a lot more the second time I watched it. There are things, really subtle things that just I wasn't looking for and didn't pick up on the first time through, but I ended up really liking the movie.
Interesting. I will say that, you know, I didn't know the source material. When I started watching it, I was like, oh, of course Zach picked this. Right? Like, this is the thing where it's like a sleepy, sort of Western-ish kind of town. There's a small, quiet town. And we've got Jessica Alba kind of playing like a femme fatale, sort of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this makes perfect sense as to why Zach picked it. But I will say, and this would be evident as we go through, but I loved it. Like, really, really liked it. And I was, I was like, I was kind of surprised that I liked it, and then I was really, really disturbed with the main scene with Miss Alba.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a bit. But so the first thing that I had written was I thought that it had just such a nice kind of sleepy opening with, you know, with mumbling Casey Affleck and his very like whisper talking sort of technique that he always tends to do. And it was just very, very quiet and very sleepy and just very, it very much caught me off guard to what this character ended up being like, because he is just so mild mannered Barney Fife like at first. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And I was very taken aback at how fast he turns, because as you see it, you know, he doesn't really want to fight Jessica Alba's character when they first meet and she's slapping him around, and he doesn't go there seeking it. It doesn't seem like, you know, he doesn't go there looking to beat her up. And, once he decides, like once he hits her back, it, you know, opens that proverbial floodgate, and then things kind of go on from there. But what were some of the things that you enjoyed about the film early on?
The main thing I really liked about it was, I thought Casey Affleck was great.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I watched it, I felt like there wasn't the book is very internal, right? It's all about what's going on inside of, Lou's head.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that you know about him through the novel that aren't immediately evident in the movie. So the first time I watched it, I felt like that was kind of missing. But the second time I watched it and I started seeing more of the subtlety and the things that Casey Affleck was doing and, you know, the director's pulling out with the scenes and that sort of thing. They're really pulling a lot of that stuff, that internal stuff that Lou's thinking about and going through, and they're just giving it to you visually, very, you know, I hate to keep using the word, but just very subtly throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the second time I watched it, I think that was my favorite part of it. It was just sort of the way that the narrative was put out there. And I think not only do I think Casey Affleck really captured the character, but I think they did a good job of sort of capturing the mood of the time and the book and all of these things that Thompson's sort of bringing together. I was really impressed with that. I really think that even the first time through when I liked it a little less, I thought that was pretty clear as far as the setting and that sort of thing goes. And I think a major component of that for me was the music. Whoever picked the music for it, I don't think could have done a much better job. It was really, really well put together, for the soundtrack. So those are the things I like the most about it. As far as the violence and the sort of the more horrific stuff goes, I knew that was coming, and just being honest, like, it didn't really bother me. And part of the reason it didn't bother me is not because it's not horrific and grotesque. It is. But it didn't bother me as much because it's really pretty toned down.
Really?
Yeah. And, like really toned down. So for as awful as the things are that Lou Ford does, trust me when I say it can be a lot worse.
Interesting. Well, I have to, head to the old library then.
Yeah. It's a pretty quick read.
Huh? Have you seen, Ain't Them Body Saints?
Mm-mm, I have not.
Okay. Casey Affleck plays kind of a criminal that's reuniting with a love from before he was a criminal. And, you know, it just kind of spirals downward from then, essentially. But it's more of a Western than this.
Okay.
And it did, at the very beginning, it had a very similar kind of tone, I felt like. And he is, you know, a fan of these sorts of movies with, you know, with the Jesse James movie.
Right.
And this, and then Ain't Them Body Saints. Like, that's kind of, I don't know if it's, I would say it's his wheelhouse, but it's definitely something that he's very comfortable in doing.
Right.
And so I was really taken by him as well. I think that it is interesting that you bring up that you liked it better the second time around. And I wonder if that would be the same for me, because while I'm watching it this first time, I'm just sort of watching it for the plot and trying to figure out, like, what I think of him, you know, like what, like, do I, you know, because there'll be times where he's getting close to caught and I'm like, ah, no, don't do this, or, oh shit, he's going to get found out, you know, and it's like that, I have that feeling of, look, this is a terrible person, but I still have that feeling of, well, I don't want him to get caught because he's our protagonist or he's our main character.
Right.
And it's like watching, you know, like watching any sort of movie where your villain is the lead.
Right.
You're like rooting against him and for him at the same time.
Right. Well, that's kind of Thompson's MO. I mean, those are the characters he likes to develop and create. I mean, these despicable people that you're not really rooting for, but there are moments where you're supposed to have moments like you did where you are rooting for them. And then you catch yourself and go, oh shit, wait a minute.
Yeah. What am I doing? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, again, I think that's another thing that the movie does really well is capturing that sort of like making you feel that way. And I think part of the reason that works so well, at least for me, is because outwardly Lou is such a just dopey, quiet, kind of unassuming person. And internally, he knows exactly what he's doing all of the time. He knows he's needling people and pushing them and, you know, trying to make them feel uncomfortable. And he knows that the town thinks he's stupid. Hmm. So he says things that sounds stupid, to, you know, sort of push their buttons. It's not the one thing, I guess, even the second time through, it's not quite as clear, but in the book and in the movie a little bit too, but in the book, he's really hard on using like these cliched phrases. So he uses these cliches over and over again, these stupid, like folksy things. And he says them all of the time, and it drives people, it just drives people nuts in town. So he keeps using them over and over again. And that's sort of his release instead of just murdering people. Cause he has this sort of monster inside of him, this killer inside of him. Haha.
Sure.
That he's trying to sort of, you know, keep in. So the way that it sort of escapes him most of the time is by being overly nice and overly Barney Fife-like, until it, you know, things just sort of explode for him.
Sure. I guess watching it, I don't know that I necessarily took away thinking that everyone thought he was dumb or thought that he was a doofus.
Yeah, that's just not entirely clear in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I still stand by it, you know, and say it's a really great adaptation, but that part of it's still not really clear.
Yeah, I guess I would say that I guess I can see where the town would maybe think of him as being pretty harmless, because they do mention that, you know, you don't even have a gun.
Yeah.
And those sorts of things. So he does come off as very like, hey, you better stop doing that now. You know, that's sort of his, you know, him being harsh as what the city might think.
Right. And that's sort of what doesn't really get, you know, developed, I guess, is that scene where, you know, the waitress is giving him a hard time about not carrying a gun. It's not just an example of someone thinking he's harmless. It's an example of someone saying we can, will, and do take advantage of you.
Ah, I see. Okay.
And that's why he sort of keeps pushing that persona like he's an idiot, because he wants people to keep thinking that they can push him around. Meanwhile, he knows that he's the one pushing them around and making them feel this way. It's this sort of like game he plays to manipulate people.
Interesting. Yeah. The next thing I had written down was I wanted to talk about the flashback with the brother in the car.
Yeah.
Now that I was sitting there and I saw it and I was like, am I being overly dense? So he's kind of playing around with killing someone?
No, he molested that little girl.
Okay, I could see now watching it, I'm like, I think that's a girl, but I can't really tell.
Right. So remember the scene where he's talking to the labor union guy, where he's talking to Casey Jones for the first time. All right. So
they're talking about his brother
Mike, right, who was convicted of molesting a little girl, right?
Okay, right.
Well, Mike didn't do it.
Mm.
Lou did.
Gotcha.
But Mike took the fall.
Okay, I understand now.
So, so that scene where they show him in the car, he's molesting the little girl, and his brother catches him.
Mm-hmm.
Mike catches him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think not that it's semantics, but I was like, okay, well, I didn't know if he was just like rage filled and was gonna strangle her, you know, because he's all about touching faces and hiding eyes and all of that, whether he's having sex with women or what have you.
Right. I mean, that's not clear in the movie or the book whether he was going to kill her. It's just
okay.
The point is Mike didn't do anything to that kid. He did.
Okay.
So.
Well, there you go. That makes. Thank you. Look at that background. Helpful. Okay. I did think that at the end of the film, I did want, since we're on the Elias Koteas character, I thought that was a really good character for him to play. Because I feel like that's not a role I typically see him in, as being like smarter than everyone else.
Right.
Because I do think of him as being Casey Jones.
Yeah.
And so to see him being like the one in the town that knows about things, but, you know, politically, or, you know, just he can't really play all of his cards. He can't really show all of his cards in a public forum.
Right.
And so he's kind of got to be careful. I was like, okay, I really like this character for him.
Yeah, I like him. He's the detective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I think that's like one of the really wonderful things about the story, is that it's more complicated than this, but it inverts the detective story, right?
Right.
Where the cop is the killer, and then the union boss, who's typically associated with some sort of organized crime, is the one who is really figuring out and unraveling the plot. Right.
Right.
I think he does an incredible job. And that scene where they're talking, and he tells him right away, like, you know, save that bullshit for the birds or whatever. I mean, that's such a wonderful scene to me for a lot of reasons. But for the main one is the one that you're saying. I mean, he's the one who's the knower of things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who can figure this stuff out and put it all together without a bunch of help. Not the cops, not the DA, none of those guys. It's him. And I think that's a really fun and different way to deal with sort of the tropes of, you know, crime fiction.
Yeah, and I do like how when they're in the car towards the end of the film, and they're having another conversation, and he's like basically saying, look, I told you to stop with the bullshit. And he says, sparrows, starlings, you know, basically saying, you remember how I told you about the birds and the bullshit thing earlier? Like, you know, he's referencing that again. And I really liked how he did that. I thought it was just smartly written.
Oh, yeah. It's really clever. Mm-hmm. He's probably my favorite character in the whole thing, in the novel and the movie. I think, I mean, he's just the most interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the actual text, is it more deliberately stated what Lou's plans are with Joyce and with Elmer? Or is that that's something that, because in the film, you are like, you get all of the information that you need, but it's not as, it's not delivered, you know, straight through. You know, you kind of pick it up a little bit here and there.
Yeah, it's not terrible. Complicated either. I mean, there is more to it. It is more direct, I think, in the novel, but I don't think you're losing anything in translation to the film. Even though it seems thin, I don't think you're losing much. Basically, the deal is that not only does I really can't think of the name of the character, but Elias Koteas' character,
Rothman.
Joe Rothman, thank you. Not only does Joe know about this, you know, what happened to Lou's brother, how he died. Lou already knew that too.
Mm-hmm.
And Lou's been kind of just stewing and thinking of, like, waiting for his moment to strike to get back at the Conways. So he's more direct about it, and it's more explicit because he's sort of explaining it to the reader. But, you know, I don't know that you really needed that in the movie. I think you could just sort of pick it up. I think, honestly, frankly, I think the movie does a better job with that element of the story.
Yeah.
I think I as the viewer, would rather sort of put the pieces together.
Right.
Than have it spoon-fed to me.
Yeah, because it does give you enough to sort of connect the dots. But yeah. It doesn't blatantly come out and say it.
No, it's not beating you over the head with it. But, yeah, in the novel, Thompson sort of explains to the reader, this is what he's going to do, and this is why he's going to do it.
Sure.
Because it's just, it's to revenge, to avenge the death of his brother, who he had sent away for molesting a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wonderfully convoluted and bizarre.
Sure. And so, you know, Joyce ends up playing a pivotal role, and we have the main plot point, I guess, and Elmer and Joyce are, you know, there's money involved, and those two are going to run away, and then they're going to make it, you know, Elmer's going to disappear, and Joyce thinks her and Lou are going to kind of run away, and, you know, there's all of this what people think are going to happen and what Lou thinks is going to happen, you know, and yeah. And so we have the sequence where he visits Joyce again before Elmer is supposed to be there. And they have sex and they start talking, and he says right away that, you know, that you're not going anywhere, like you're not getting away.
Yeah.
And so as an audience member, not knowing what's going to happen, I'm like, oh, okay, well, he's going to shoot her or he's going to stab her, and that's going to be it. Like, those are my expectations.
Yeah.
And he puts on the gloves, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe he's going to strangle her, you know, and I'm drawing upon all of these other movies that I've seen where something like this happens. And he begins to punch her in the face.
Yep.
And I wrote down that the beating is one of the toughest things I've seen in a long time for me to stomach. Like, for me, it was just unbelievable. Like, I was sitting there watching it, and I was sweating, and I was just like my stomach hurt, and I felt, you know how our mutual friend that we already mentioned, Ben, gets, mm-hmm. is not, doesn't have the strongest constitution, I wouldn't think.
No.
On some things. And so I felt very much like that, to where I was like, oh my God, like I can usually handle anything without problem. But for whatever reason, this really, really was disturbing. And I don't know if it was because it was just punching. It was just such a simple, just terrible act, or if it was the incredible prosthetics that were on Jessica Alba's face, or the combination, or what, but I was like, I was very, very disturbed by that.
I think for me, it was the combination.
Mm. And I think it was also like, also when she, it's not like she gets hit a few times and then blacks out.
Right.
And then you see the typical thing where someone's on top and they're just pounding into nothing.
Right.
Right. Like, I feel like you can see that a lot, but you're seeing him punch her in the face. And she's got her right eye open still most of the time. And it's then, you know, she says that she loves him. And I was like, oh my God, this is really hard. Like, this is really hard for me.
Yeah. Yes. Man. All of those things. Yes. It's brutal. And it's horrific. And I guess maybe to take a small step back, I mean.
Sure.
You said they have sex.
Oh.
It's not just sex. I mean, he beats her during sex, and she seems to like it.
Yeah, and they do mention that she's a prostitute, and so, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is probably something different, you know, for her.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, you know, some, like, fat Texas oil man, or what have you. And so it's like, you know, a different thing for her. So I'm like, okay, I guess I can see why she likes having, you know, being whipped with a belt.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just whipped. I mean, it's choked and actually like punched,
mm-hmm.
like literally beaten during sex. And, it's disturbing.
Apparently those ladies in Texas in the 50s went for it because Kate Hudson wasn't too bothered by it either.
Well, while. I think that's the difference between Joyce and Amy, though. Joyce likes it.
Mm-hmm.
Amy tolerates it.
Ah.
And make of that what you will, whatever Thompson or whoever's trying to say about, you know, women or how, you know, if you want to read that misogynistically or whatever, I don't think that that's too far off base. But I think that's the key difference between those two women, though. One tolerates and one likes it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all kinds of fucked up. It's basically what it is. That whole thing, I mean, that's all planned. You know, I mean, there's nothing about that for Lou where this is spur of the moment. Like, well, just got to kill her. It's like, no, this is what I should do. This is going to be great.
Yeah, and that, I think that's part of the disturbing is, you know, going back to the beating again, it's like not only is he punching her, but they choose to make it realistic in that he's got to, like, take a breath.
Yeah.
And he's got to, you know, he's wiping the sweat, and I'm like, okay, oh, well. We're almost done. All right, don't worry. It'll be all right. We're almost
done. Yeah, he even tells her it's almost done. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oof. Yeah, it's, you know, and I think the smart thing to do in that scene is to show it.
Yes.
Like, I prefer, like, the more Hitchcockian way of doing these things where you don't show it and you just leave it up to the audience's imagination. I think this is a time when you have to show it. Because if you don't show it, then you don't understand. Like, you don't really get, like, the brutality of it.
Sure, yeah. It definitely adds to the depth of what he's capable of. Because it, you know, if he's just beating into, like, a pillow and it seems like it's a person.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just kind of tune out. I'd be like, okay, well, he killed her, and
yeah,
you know, how bad could it be? And it is striking to me that it is, you know, Jessica Alba, who's obviously a beautiful woman. Yeah. Just getting the tar kicked out of her.
Yeah. I mean, well, they say it later in the movie, but I mean, her face gets turned to hamburger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, it's one of those things, I guess. And I don't know that we want to, you know, bemoan this point too much, but I mean, it's one of those things when you watch it, like if your stomach doesn't turn at this point, like you need to, like, reevaluate your life,
right? Yeah,
like the choices and, like, the things that you think about the world,
because
it's just this despicable scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the really interesting part about it, though, is not just like the horrible violence, but that at some point within the narrative, like, you're still drawn back to Lou.
Yeah.
And you're forced to feel some kind of, like, sympathy for him, or, like, want him to get away at some point, or try to, like, understand him, or, you know, find some sort of redeeming characteristic within this person who has no redeeming qualities at all.
Well, absolutely. And this is skipping, and I want to backtrack after this, but Brent Briscoe plays the bum.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy where later he comes to basically blackmail Lou,
right,
and say, you know, you give me $5,000 or I'm going to tell people what I saw. And when he starts doing all of that, I'm like, this fucking bum, like, fuck this guy. You know, and I'm all pissed off at him that he might, you know, squeal on Lou and tell the authorities. And I caught myself like, what am I doing? Like, of course he should go and tell the, you know, somebody. And it was one of those instances where, like you were saying, I caught myself hoping that Lou didn't get caught.
Yeah. And well, I mean,
I would have never thought that after that scene we've just been talking about.
Oh yeah. And it's strange to feel that way because almost everyone in the movie is a terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the only significant characters that are not terrible are Bob Maples.
Right.
And, the district attorney.
Or drunk Bob Maples.
Well, but he's getting drunk, though, because he's, like, he's getting drunk, though, because he finds out that Lou did it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, his, like, whole worldview has been shattered by this, because he thinks Lou's just, like, this stand-up, regular, you know, good old boy.
Sure.
And now when he finds out that Lou does this, that's why he starts drinking so much.
What do you think of Amy, though?
Amy, she's not despicable, but but she's pitiable.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't have a spine. She just wants to put up with these things. She knows, or she has some inkling of what Lou did and won't tell on him and won't do anything about it. She allows herself to be beaten mm-hmm. by him, during sex. She just sort of puts up with it. She's not a bad person, but she's a sad person.
Sure. What I like about that is having Kate Hudson play it the way that she does. She's this very, outward sort of person. Like, everything's right. big. You know, and so when he comes home or when she finds out that he's been sleeping with someone else, you know, she throws a fit and it's very theatrical and it's very, just a big performance.
Mm-hmm.
But then once he really presses a matter to her, she caves.
Yeah.
And I think that that's interesting because, you know, Jessica Alba's character, like I was saying, she kind of plays the femme fatale. At least that's what I thought she was going to play at the beginning of the movie because she, you know, is using sex to get her way, it seemed like. And she is very quiet as a person.
Right.
Except for that one sequence where she is slapping him. But everything is internal there and everything is external for Amy, it seemed like.
Right. You know, that's another good observation about the difference between those two characters. And I would add, too, you know, in the novel, you see more of Amy and she's kind of a nag.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And they, like, Thompson makes a point of, like, not really portraying her in a positive way. And it doesn't make sense why Lou is with her and it doesn't make sense why she's with Lou. Because they both want different things.
But the town loves her, right?
But the town loves her. And she's really not actually a bad person, but like, it's just like, what are either of you doing together? So her character gets a little more fleshed out in that way. I think that's a really interesting observation too. Like how external she is. I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah. What about the mother?
That's not his mother.
Isn't it?
No, it's a maid.
Oh, I was led to believe it was the mom.
Yeah, which really makes the movie, really makes the story very weird, right?
Yeah, because I thought, it's like, okay, well, this is why he is how he is, because the mother has made him do all of these things to her.
Right, well, that's true, but it's the maid.
Oh.
And
is that in the movie? Is it like that? Did they
say
that?
No, it's not clear in the movie that it's the maid, okay. But it is, it's not his mom.
Okay.
It's the maid who was also his father's mistress.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I was going to say it had to be someone at the house, but I didn't. I don't know. I guess I just assumed it was the mom.
Yeah, like in the novel, it's the maid who is his father's mistress, and then after that incident that they show in the bedroom where she's naked or whatever.
Yeah, and she's slapping her butt and whatnot.
Yeah, and. He smacks her butt and that sort of thing. Then the father, his dad finds out and, she's trying to explain to him like how she's made him a man or some such nonsense. And then she is murdered or she goes away like under very mysterious circumstances.
Mm.
So, but that's not his mom.
Okay. I don't know if I'm relieved by that or if it's like, okay, well, this is very clearly why he is the way he is. And I was kind of, you know, settled into that idea.
Right. Well, I guess what's intriguing about that scene though, is because that's so, I mean, whether you think it's his mom or, you know, it's the maid,
in some ways it matters, but it doesn't really matter. Right.
Yeah. But like, that's like one of those moments where you're like, oh, poor Lou. A little guy, like, you just want to give him a hug. You're like, God damn it, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, you're definitely like that. Like, whoa, what the fuck is she, is this, like, sexual predator doing to this little boy?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And when he finds those pictures or whatever, and he has those flashbacks and remembers all that stuff, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was like, wow, that's, this movie was much more graphic than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, they're really they're going for it. All right. you know, it's like, I can't hate on that. I mean, geez, Louise.
Yeah. And, you know, but I think that's the thing that I liked about it so much is that they went for it.
Oh, sure.
And they said, okay, we have this horrific, disturbed narrative. Let's just do it.
Yeah, and say F it and let's just go.
Yeah. And I think that's one of my, that just sort of fuck you attitude about it. Like, I really like that.
Well, yeah, especially from a director like Michael Winterbottom. It's not, you know, it's not like, well, last time we talked and we did Child of God, and James Franco was cutting a lot of the disturbing parts or making them less disturbing.
Right.
And so that, where it was like he was trying to play it safe and maybe make it a little more commercial. And that's not what this is at all.
No. And I appreciate that more as, like, you know, artistically, I appreciate that more. Like, I don't really, I'm at a point in my life and the things that I read and I enjoy, like, I don't want milquetoast, vanilla, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I've had enough of that. Like, show me something.
Well, and it's
make me feel something.
Yeah. It is so strange to me that this is directed by Michael Winterbottom, because I know him from The Trip,
mm-hmm.
which is slightly different than this movie.
I'd say so.
Or, like, I've seen 24 Hour Party People. I've seen A Mighty Heart with mm-hmm. Angelina Jolie. And so I look at this and I'm like, wow, that is not at all what I would expect from that director. And so I do like it when directors can show that they have this very disturbing story to tell. And it is very unexpected, I think.
Yeah.
What did we think, you know, with the cast, and we discussed how it was a very good cast. The only one that I felt like I didn't know if I bought him for being in the 50s was Simon Baker, was Howard Hendricks.
Yeah, I didn't.
Because he just looked like he was in 2010 to me.
Yeah, his hair was a little too tousled, right?
Yeah, it was like a little somewhat dyed looking, or like a hybrid or something. I'm like, all right, dude, this is definitely like in a break from The Mentalist or what?
Yeah. That's pretty much what I thought, too. I was like, oh, he just like did this in between like seasons or something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe episodes. I don't know. But yeah, I think he's the only one who didn't actually have the look.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else I thought did. I still liked him in the movie.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I just wish they would have combed his hair differently.
I liked him too. I thought he was nice and distant.
Yeah.
You know, it was a guy where we didn't need to see his struggle outside of the office and all of that, or outside of the scene he's in.
But I'll tell you this though, in defense of his tousled hair, he's supposed to be an outsider, right?
Mm.
He's not one of the good old boys from Central City.
He's not an oil boy from Central City. Yeah.
Yeah, he's from, you know, somewhere else. Maybe not even Texas.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe. I was thinking like some kind of big city to where he would look a little different, I guess.
Right. So, you know, with that in mind, it still doesn't look like a look from the 50s, but it's still helps position him as an outsider.
Sure, yeah, I guess
so. So I'll give him credit for that.
One of the guys that I thought fit right in and was kind of an odd cast for the amount of screen time was Bill Pullman.
Oh man, he was great, right?
Yeah, I was like, whoa, this is the president here.
This is the president.
Where's Will Smith?
Oh my god.
I was like, what? Wow.
It couldn't be like a Beetlejuice reference or something like that. It had to be the worst thing he was ever a part of.
Okay? Yeah. But I was just looking at him going, holy cow, does he not look like the Bill Pullman I know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's in the movie for 15 minutes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it was stunt casting or something, but I was just like, wow, that's a good name for such a small role. So that felt like to me, like a guy that had read the source material or something and just wanted to be part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he had read it or not, but I thought he was my favorite. He was my favorite character in the whole thing.
Well, yeah, he comes in and starts just bellowing throughout the halls, and
yeah,
and I was like, oh, well, this is adding a nice bit of levity to this very, very heavy film.
Yeah,
and it does give, you know, and it makes sense story wise. It does give Lou an opportunity to tell the story and sum things up, basically.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, though. I mean, he felt like an actor. He felt like someone playing the role that got it.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't feel like someone playing a part.
Sure.
Like, I thought Ned Beatty was good too, but it felt like he was just playing a part that he's played a million times before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, slightly shady.
Businessman, yeah, oil man or businessman, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but Pullman, I think, came across as someone who really understood the character that he was playing and what he was supposed to be doing in, like, the moment, I guess.
Sure, and while we're talking about cast, the ladies were cast very well, and it's not often I say, like, I'm not typically a big Kate Hudson or a Jessica Alba fan, I mean, honestly, but... Yeah. It's not like I would seek out their work, I guess, typically. But it is better than the majority of the options that they had. Some of the people that were considered to play Jessica Alba's role were Emily Blunt, Anne Hathaway, and Amanda Seyfried. Or Seyfried. I guess, I don't know that I think they have to have a right amount of sexuality to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jessica Alba really is good at that. I don't know that I look at Anne Hathaway or Emily Blunt, like those two particularly, they seem like very intelligent always, I guess, to me. And so
yeah.
they wouldn't have fit in this world, I guess.
Yeah, I could see Anne Hathaway as Amy, though.
Sure, and the people that were considered to play Amy were Michelle Williams, and I could have seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually do really enjoy her. Natalie Portman, Sienna Miller, and Katherine Heigl, which would have been a poor choice, I think.
Yeah, and Natalie Portman would not have.
No.
No. She's too tough.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could almost see Natalie Portman as Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's got to be a little bit tougher because of her, you know, her occupation, but she's just too smart and tough to be Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I couldn't see that.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Scene over.
Yeah. Well, I think, I thought Kate Hudson was really good though. And I'm with you. Like, I normally don't seek out movies she's in because they're mostly like romantic comedies and that sort of thing. And it's just not anything I want to be within 100 feet of. right. So, But no, she was fantastic, I thought.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there were moments where I thought Jessica Alba, she looked the part, and there were moments with her that were really good, but I think there were, more often than not, I thought she was actually kind of stiff.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with her, you know, being in it or even as an actress, but I don't know. She was sort of the anti-Bill Pullman for me.
Oh, okay.
I felt like I was saying before, I think Pullman really understood what he was doing and understood the material and the character. I don't think Jessica Alba really understood what she was doing, and it felt like she was reading lines a lot.
Hmm. Do you think it's because she was not as sexual?
No, I think it's just because she's not as good an actress.
Okay.
So
it wasn't like it was a choice that she was making. It was more like an ability.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe she was making that choice, but I think it's just, if that was a choice, that was a piss poor choice and somebody should have told her no.
Mm.
but that's me. I mean, I would rather see someone a little bit more emotive, like that scene at the end where,
where she's all, yeah.
Yeah,
spoilers in case you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, sorry. But when she comes in towards the end, I mean, that's pretty, I don't know. Like, I just, to me, that scene should have been a little bit more weepy and mumbly. You know, like, it shouldn't have been Lou, I'm sorry. I did not tell them anything. I love you. It should have been, Lou, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just more from her.
Yeah, like make me, as the viewer, believe that you just survived this horrific beating, right? Mm-hmm. Make me believe that you are someone who had your face turned literally into hamburger. And her diction was too clear, and it was just all very straight, and I was like, I don't
know. Yeah, you would think, because he does, I mean, the makeup does have it to where her mouth is pretty well damaged. Yeah. And she is very clear with her speech.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, with her, it just felt stiff. But, you know, if that's the only thing that I, you know, walk away from this and say that's the thing that bothered me, then I think I need to calm down.
Sure. I would say that she is feeding off a little bit of Casey Affleck's energy, but he's a much different character.
Right.
Supposed to be doing that. And
right, and he's also kind of doing the Casey Affleck thing, too.
Yeah, sure.
So
I will say that I did have to put the captions on for the conversation in the car. Because I was like, wait a minute. They're saying some good shit here. I'm missing it. You know, like, I'm not catching it all. And so I did have to go back and put that on just for that section. Because I had it on loud, and I was like, oh, I'm just not making this out. I know that this is more than what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So, okay. So, I did also put, you know, we've already talked about this, but I said, do you, specifically you, watch this hoping that he'll escape or get away with it? You know, and I wrote that one when Amy is killed and, you know, the bum comes over and then there's the little pratfall.
Yeah.
Slipping in the urine. And I was like, do you want him to get away with it at that moment?
I didn't want him to get away with it, but I wanted him to kill again.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the way you're supposed to feel about it. I mean, we all want Jason Voorhees to murder people too.
Sure.
He's just a human version of that. So, and I think the purpose of the story is to want, the purpose of the narrative is to want the reader or the viewer to want Lou to kill again. And I did. I wanted him to kill the bum. And honestly, the fact that he doesn't kill the bum it's not satisfying for me as the viewer, but makes really wonderful storytelling, I think.
Sure, yeah.
You want him to kill him, just the same way you want, you know, Norman Bates to kill whoever comes to the motel.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he doesn't get the satisfaction of killing that bum, I think is terrific.
Yeah, I do like how he's trying to put a stamp on it, because it's kind of like, oh, maybe he's not all the way dead yet. And so then he's beating the shit out of him.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the angle that I was expecting from the Joyce killing, or the Joyce beating.
Yeah.
Was when he's on top, just hitting him.
Well, let me ask you this, and this is not entirely random, but just thinking about all the people that Lou kills. Did you watch the thing with Robert Durst?
No.
Okay. But you know who Robert Durst is, right?
Yes.
You know the whole thing. Okay, so the deal with Durst was that he wasn't real. I mean, he was a murderer, of course, but, like, he wasn't just randomly killing people. He just kept killing people who figured him out or kind of got in the way a little bit. And, like, that was his motive for killing people. It's like, they know too much. I can't have them know anything about me. Therefore, they have to die. I mean, that's why he killed all the people he killed.
Right.
Lou's kind of the same way. Like, he's not, like, going on a kill-crazy rampage throughout Central City, just murdering everyone he sees, right? He's only killing people who know a little bit too much about him. He's got one specific revenge plot to kill the son of Chester Conway or whatever,
right.
To kill Elmer.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, everyone else is just sort of... They figure it out. They know a little bit too much about him, or he thinks they know too much about him, and that's it, right?
So, right, yeah, because he had said, you know, that that was the one instance where I was like, I really did feel bad, because when he decides to kill the bum,
Yeah.
He was talking about how he actually loved Amy and wanted to marry her and all that.
Right, and whether he's telling the truth or not. Sure. Is, you know.
And I chose to believe that.
Right.
And was like, okay, well, way to go, bum. Now you're going to die, and now she's dead because of you.
Right, but the thing is he was going to kill her anyway.
Right.
Right? So, because he's kind of figured out, like, she knows a little bit too much about
him. Yeah, she definitely knows something was up, sure.
Yeah. So, to bring this back to what we're talking about, why I say all that is that that's what makes that scene so unsatisfying, right? Or it makes it satisfying, but so unsatisfying for Lou,
mm-hmm.
right? He doesn't get to kill the person who got in his way. Somebody else does it for him. And he doesn't get to be the hero who killed, who avenged Amy's murderer, right? He's just the guy who showed up after the fact. So he can't even feign being a hero anymore.
Well, and I do like how he's kind of beating him and he's showing frustration, or, you know, it's a show. I mean, part of it is he's putting on a show saying that this bum killed Amy. But he is, I guess you could read it as like he's pissed and beating the guy because he didn't get to be the one to kill him.
Right.
That's always like, how dare you be killed by someone else, you fucker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that guy, that homeless guy, that's his out.
Yeah.
Right. He imagines that to be his out. It's not, but he imagines that to be, you know, his escape. He can be the hero again. He can be, you know, the guy that saved the life of, or, you know, avenged the murder of Amy what's her face.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Sure. I like that. I do like that. Huh. Okay. Well, Did the ending come? I mean, obviously it wasn't a surprise because you read the book, but I was
right.
I was surprised because of, you know, the amount of beating that Jessica Alba mm-hmm. took, that she was still alive.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's smart from the mentalist to not reveal, you know, to not reveal that she was alive and still kind of hanging in there and all that. So that did take me by surprise. And then we have the, you know, the only unfortunate part for me was the CGI fire and the sort of melding of the two of them together.
Yeah, the CGI fire was pretty lame.
Mm-hmm. So that was the only part where I was like, I don't know about that. But I do like how he did get them all in the same area together and took out quite a few of them from death, so...
I mean, that's sort of his MO, kill people that find out about you.
Right.
They all knew about him. He's like, well, that's it. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess this is one where I'll say that, you know, it's not often that I get so affected by a movie. And so I was really pleased with the selection, and it's one, you know, that I'll have on my wish list for the Christmas season, which I always have for the friends and family, so I, you know, encourage them not to just buy something that they think I'll like. No,
right.
No, just buy from the wish list. Don't just think I'll enjoy World War Z, because I won't.
And so
this will definitely be on there. Although I'll be like, hey mom, we should probably not watch this one. I know you bought it for me, but this one's not for you.
This is just for me. Yeah. This is Eric's special time.
That's right. I only watched this one late at night, but yeah, so I was really pleased with this one. This is one that, you know, we do a lot of movies and we do a lot of these pod shots, and a lot of them I'm like, okay, yeah, I like that movie. All right. And oh, that was fun. But this is one that was, you know, this is one that to really chew on, to really think about.
Well, good. I'm so glad you liked it. I really like a lot of these we do. But this is definitely one of the better ones, I think. It's certainly, I mean, it's not even in the same building as Child of God. But,
sure.
But I think it's just a really well executed film all around. And, you know, a lot of times when you get like those all-star casts or you don't hear about it, like it does, like you said, raise a lot of red flags, but this time they got it right. I wish mm-hmm. I'd known about it sooner.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, do you have anything else about The Killer Inside Me before we move on?
Just see the movie and read the book.
Yes, I also have the book on my wish list as well now, so I'll have to check out the old library, I think, for that one.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very quick read. It's like 250 pages, but you'll read it fast.
Okay. Well, I'm a slow reader, so we'll see.
Yeah, you'll be, no, trust me. It's
like Child of God fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very simply written. He's got a very direct, straightforward style of writing. He doesn't mince words. There's not a lot of, you know, stuff that he's trying to be complicated about. He just is telling you.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Krusey. If people out there had any comments, suggestions, or any movies that they would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, they could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. If you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to Amazon.com and search for our wish list. Like I said, the movie and the book is over there. In case someone wanted to gift that for me, I would definitely not be upset about that. But the list is full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. We also have a bunch of stuff for our house that we bought, because there's a lot of shit that I don't have, I realized. So you can just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. I do want to thank Zach for coming on once again and talking about The Killer Inside Me with me. If they wanted to hear more from you or get in contact with you, where would they find you?
They, meaning you, gentle listener, you should find me on the Twitter @ZachKrusey, that's ZACKKRUSE, or on the website, that's just my name again, .com. And also coming up next spring, like February, late February, early March, if you are in the Midwest, you should consider heading over to the Michigan State Comics Forum. I'm co-organizing that this year.
All right.
And should be a great time full of comics and academic stuff about comics and some great artists. So there you go.
When is that going to be? Is that not set?
The for sure date, I don't believe is set, but if you go to the MSUComicsForum.com, then you'll be able to find out what's going on there.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
A feeling that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. They don't know how to love you my way. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you. Take this heart away. Say you give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I know you're gonna treat me right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight.